This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. Project, welcome back to this after show. We have a ton to cover. I think, the sun is shining right now. We're outside. We're not outside, but we were outside. And, you know, we're getting our vitamin D. Actually, we'll talk about vitamin D. That's actually a good one. I want to cover that today. But, you know, I think that overall, the pandemic, obviously, except for a few kind of isolated pockets, is turning around in general. What's the sentiment you've kind of gathered?
It's been fascinating. It's like, I feel like people are into camps right now. There's like one camp, which is like, no, dude, this is not going away. This is so bad. You wait till wave number 13. Like, you will be begging for this, how it is now. And then there's other people like, hey, in Australia, there's been 98 people dead. Which is like bad, but you know, it's not that many people out of 26 million.
Yeah.
And in other countries, it sounds bad, but same thing. It's like getting a lot better. And it's not nearly as bad as we thought. And I wish we could just all get back on with life again. And I feel like everyone is stuck in those two camps. Not sure which one is right. But it does make it interesting because people have pretty heated conversations about it.
Well, yeah. Anytime you can divide an issue, because you basically got a health camp, which is like the health of society. And you've got the economic camp.
Yep.
So like, okay, health camp was, everyone was listening to them in the beginning. Everyone was team health. And now everyone is starting to jump on board team economy, because if you hold on to a lockdown any longer, the damage you do to the economy is going to cause way more deaths unnecessarily than what could have ever happened with a pandemic. So it's interesting watching the dynamic shift, but let's not get into it too much today. Vitamin D. So I listened to Dr. Rhonda Patrick on Joe Rogan's show. Did you listen to it?
I have.
Yeah, fuck. And so she's talking about, and I put out an email about this. If you guys subscribe to the daily email, you get this sort of stuff. And it's actually a really interesting one. I put it out and I had a lot of people replying with different stuff. But essentially the idea is that, and we've talked about this before, when you take your ancestry and you displace yourself from your ancestral origin. So that, in other words, you know, if I'm...
So basically what you and me have done.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm half Asian, right? So my country of origin would be China. So if I go to China right now, essentially that is mostly what my skin, my melanin production for the last however many thousands of years of evolution has, the climate that it's been designed for. Now, obviously I'm a hybrid, so it's not really the same. But if you take someone that is, so say I was fully Chinese, I'm perfectly suited with the right amount of melanin in my skin to absorb the correct amount of vitamin D for my health in China. Now, if you put me in a country like Australia, it's fine because I'm prepared for it, because it's close to the equator, it's warmer, it's hot, there's still a similar amount of sunlight, if not more sometimes. But if you go too far north, if you took me really far north, I'd be at a disadvantage because the angle at which the sun hits the upper northern hemisphere, so parts of Europe, northern parts of America, Canada, all that sort of stuff, is you want really pale skin there because you're not getting enough UVA, UVB light. And this is what Rhonda goes to explain. And as a result, you become vitamin D deficient. Now, you can put all this climate stuff aside. In the Western world, studies have shown people spend 92% of their entire life indoors, which is pretty crazy. But if you think about it, it's very accurate. Like you go to the car, you're sitting in a room, in an office, in your home. Like you're never just chilling fully outside, right? So as a result, we're vitamin D deficient. Now, here's what the data is starting to correlate, okay, so not causate, correlate with low vitamin D. The more deficient you are in vitamin D, the worse your symptoms are, the longer your recovery is, the worse your potential morbidity outcomes will be, so comorbidity. So if you have other underlying issues like asthma or stuff like cancer or even just any sort of you know, like diabetes, just some sort of immunocompromisation to begin with. If you have low vitamin D on top of that, you're going to make those issues even worse. So she was saying that basically the vast majority of the Western world has vitamin D deficiency, should always go and get tests first. Obviously, you don't want to just start smashing vitamin D if you don't need to. From a cost perspective and a health perspective, it's very likely you'll need it. It's very likely you need it. And now I'm going to screw this part up, so I don't want to get into it too deep, but essentially what she was saying, and maybe you can correct me if you heard it differently, Raph, but the receptor site for the coronavirus within your lungs and within your respiratory system is the same site that vitamin D enhances. So if you have low vitamin D, that receptor site that is supposed to combat and fight off coronavirus, when it attaches to that receptor site, that those receptor sites are weakened with vitamin D, which is why vitamin D is even more closely correlated than, say, something like vitamin C. So, or being low in other vitamins. And vitamin D is actually a hormone as well, which we found out in that podcast. So, the particular mechanism by which coronavirus attacks the body and attaches to the body and causes COVID-19, that site is primarily propped up by high levels of vitamin D. So, when that goes down, your chances of getting it and getting worse symptoms, it can be greatly enhanced by low vitamin D. So, start supplementing.
Yeah, it was interesting.
Is that how you had it?
Yeah, and it explains a ton of other stuff. One of the other big ones was if you carry more fat, you're much more likely to be vitamin D deficient as well, which is why it's been hitting the fatter populations harder in terms of symptoms.
Yeah, so sorry, explain how she said that again.
It's a fat-soluble vitamin,
okay.
Vitamin D. So, you basically need more as you become more overweight. More sunlight to be sufficient in vitamin D.
Okay.
So, the same person will probably need, if they were exactly the same amount of sunlight, everything like that, you gain 20 kilos of fat, your chances on probability of being vitamin deficient in vitamin D have gone up significantly.
Right.
So, like the perfect storm is, you know, a really overweight black person in New York City in America in winter. You know, it's like basically the perfect storm.
Yeah. Who works in an office.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Of being vitamin D deficient. And it's interesting because even, wasn't on this podcast, I talked about like in other places like India where you'd really expect it just to be ravaging because it's like zero social distancing. You can't social distance because like 20 people share a bedroom. It hasn't really hit very hard at all. You know, and that's just like people that, you know, get plenty of sunlight and they're living in the same place they've always lived for thousands of years.
And they're not very overweight. They're the opposite.
So yeah, it would probably take a while to this is proven, but it does seem like particularly if you are like darker skinned and you are living in somewhere where it's winter right now, or you're more easily deficient, like it would be 100% the time to get tested. And I even shared it straight away with a few members of the gym that are dark skin and coming into winter here.
Okay.
It's much more likely you'll be deficient somewhere like Sydney in winter because so much less vitamin D. So it's interesting and would make a lot of sense.
Yeah. And so we can't safely give you guys the recommendations because we're not like official doctors on this part. But if you were to take vitamin D, you would take somewhere between 4,000 and 6,000 IUs. That's apparently what it's supposed to be. But get the test. So go get blood work, get your vitamin D levels tested because there are a lot of foods that contain vitamin D. One of the main ones being egg yolks. So if you eat a lot of eggs, potentially you might not be vitamin D deficient. So people that don't get a ton of sunlight get kind of enough. Like I would say I would be slightly worried that I might not be vitamin D sufficient just because I don't get a lot of sunlight. But I do eat a lot of the foods that have high levels of vitamin D. So it'll just be interesting when I get a test, what my levels will be at. So I'll check.
Yeah, I think it's worthwhile. Like I was supplementing with it and then I got a test done and I didn't need to. So I stopped and that was the end. But that was in summer. Okay. So I would be interested and I think I might do it again coming into winter.
Do you remember what your levels were? Do you remember the number?
Yeah, it was like, I don't remember the number, but I was basically 20% below the top end of what you want. Like got that kind of sweet spot. I was above the sweet spot of where you'd want to be with vitamin D.
And what was your sun exposure like around the time?
A lot of sun exposure. Yeah. I was like riding my bike everywhere. I was like pretty much getting sunburned a lot. Not tons. Like I don't sunbake for hours in the sun.
Yeah, yeah.
But every single day I would probably spend like an hour on my bike out in the sun. And you know, I wouldn't wear like long sleeve clothes. Like I often wear like muscle tanks and stuff.
Yeah.
So I would say quite a lot. But for your clients, such a good one for them to get tested at this time.
And I would also like to know, they didn't talk about this, but how quickly, so say you go from going into the sun every day, your levels are full, like, and then you just went indoors, like 100%. I'm sure we could find research on this. How quickly those levels deplete? Like, does it deplete in a day? Does it take 3 months, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. The interesting was when I moved to Amsterdam, I'd heard about it and I kind of like pushed it to the back and then I started to feel like, hey, I think I'm like not feeling as good. And then I started supplementing there and I felt a boost immediately.
Mm. Yeah. I remember a long time ago, a client at the gym was diagnosed with leukemia and they took her in and they were doing tests on her and stuff. And they're like, you know, it's definitely leukemia because we can see the symptoms and we're taking the blood work and blah, blah, blah. And she's like super hard worker, like really high position, big corporate desk job. like she is, you know, she's darker skin naturally, but she's quite pale. Mm. And you're like, wow, for someone of, you know, that should be darker, like you're quite a pale person. It's like sometimes, you know, people see me after I spend summer and they see my sister who doesn't necessarily go out to the beach every day in summer. And they're like, oh, you guys are related? Yeah. She's so much lighter skin than you. I'm like, yeah, you can like dramatically change the, obviously the characteristics of your skin from sun exposure, even if you're like, you know, with your siblings or whatever, you can look at like completely different people. And they diagnosed her. Yeah. Sorry. They diagnosed her with leukemia, but then one of the other doctors, they brought a specialist in and he looked at the blood work and he's like, vitamin D is super low. So let's get her on intravenous vitamin D to start with. Every symptom got cleared up. It was just low vitamin D. That's how powerful vitamin D, like she was empty,
crazy.
Like zero vitamin D, right? And she, and
then just being indoors.
Yeah. They asked her how, when's the last time you got sun? And she was like, I reckon it's probably been like 10 years.
Oh.
Yeah. Doesn't take time off, doesn't go on holidays,
wow.
always spends time indoors, eating pretty unhealthy, overweight as well, like trained indoors. Like probably the most sun they get is like they went out on a 400-meter run for a warm-up. But yeah, that's what they thought.
She ran leukemia.
Yeah, she's got to run faster. But yeah, that's how crazy low vitamin D is. Yeah, absolutely crazy. You know what's also crazy is we got James Smith PT in the house again last week. I know you guys listening to this. Some of you may have found us through James last time. So welcome if you're fairly recent. But yeah, 6 months ago, we had on the biggest guest of 2019. He smashed so many records. Why do you think that is? Obviously, he's popular himself and he shared it around. But we obviously got a great response from the show as well. I mean, round two was even better. But what do you think it was? What do you think it is about him that makes him special?
Yeah, I don't know about the show in particular, but clearly his message hits home a lot. And I think he explained it pretty well on what he does very well, like what his special talent is on the show, which is kind of like what we're doing right now, but he's taking a lot of the complex stuff that's out there, or even just the people that are like very top of the game, best in the research, and he just brings it down to the everyday person.
Yeah.
You know, he's like really like, hey, I'll take it and I'll let you know what these people are saying, and he does it in a fun way.
Yeah.
And that is like really, I think, just like the ultimate double-two punch, where you're like, sick, I got the info, I know it's good quality, I didn't have to hear some guy like talk about science and papers I'm never, ever going to read and tell me the footnotes are in the bottom. I'm never going to click the footnotes. Like, stupid shit ever.
Yeah.
And it was like pretty fun at the end of it as well. And he's just obviously talented at doing that together.
Oh man, I can't wait to release it. Like we talked about his experience with like psychedelics and his new book and the book tour itself. And actually some of the crazy responses that he's got from his first book.
I think the second book for most people that listen to our podcast will be more popular.
Dude.
Because the first one, I know a lot of people are like, hey, it's like pretty basic fitness because most people need basic.
Yeah.
And if you're really into fitness and you love it, you're like, oh, I've probably heard some of it, but it's still good. Whereas the second one, I think if you're very into fitness, there's still like really good stuff in there for you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think what anyone likes about any person that's achieved success is when they tell you that not only is it super achievable in your own life, but I'm just like you now. Like I'm not any more special or any different because of my success. I'm still the same person. I think when people try to separate themselves from reality and they pretend like they're some kind of superstar, some, you know, gift from God, that's when people get lost. They're like, I can't relate to you. It's you know, you're too far gone. You're just this crazy woo-woo celebrity status. He's nothing like that at all. He's just one of the guys. And he's super fun to hang out with. Can't say enough good things about him. I also, from his inspiration, actually, because he goes, boys, so excited. I got a booking tomorrow. I was like, what the fuck is he talking about, a booking? And I realized he has a booking to a restaurant. I realized, holy shit, we reopen restaurants tomorrow. So right after that podcast, I called my local cafe and I'm like, please tell me you're seating people tomorrow. He's like, yeah, of course. And I was like, okay, can I book a table? He goes, we don't do bookings, but I'll keep it free for you. He's like, just come before 7:30 and I'll get you. Right at 6:59, I was standing at the door. And then she actually couldn't join me for this, but I was like, you know, I don't need company. I just want to know what it's like. And I sat down and I drank that first coffee, not in a takeaway cup. And it was the weirdest experience. Like I'd gotten so used to having food indoors and sitting down in the cafe, and then I'd gotten so used to just takeaway coffee that it just felt so weird to sit down, which is so strange. You would never think in your life that sitting in and eating at a restaurant or a cafe would be a strange experience, but it was. I just,
man, it's crazy. I did it as well. I was like, oh, this place is going to be packed. Like, it's been closed for so long. Because this place I went to has been closed the entire time. They didn't do takeaway.
Right.
Just been closed.
Oh, really? Fully closed?
Fully closed. Yeah, they just weren't well set up for takeaway. It's more of a sit-down place, okay. Right? So, they're just closed. Anyway, they were open. I was like, it's going to be crazy. Anyway, I walked in. Zero people were there. And there was zero people the entire time.
Oh, really? No one?
No one came.
Was it popular before it closed?
It was popular before. I think people are pretty cautious, potentially, really? about going back. Like, it wasn't that packed. But yeah, I had almost completely forgotten that just people sat on the street. Like, I was got so used to walking down the pedestrian side, like the sidewalk, and there was no one there.
Oh, yeah.
And all of a sudden, it's like people out, like sitting.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I totally forgot how it used to be.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's so many things that will slowly come back, and you'll realize, oh, wow, that's totally different.
We used to have gyms.
Fuck, you know, we used to not have traffic for a bit, but now we've got traffic again. The traffic is horrible. Yeah, that's the one thing I don't miss at all. But yeah, no, it's part of life. That's what happens in a busy city. So I mean, for a while we've been mentioning the dumbbell program, and you know, depending on where you are and where you're listening to this, obviously you guys have got totally different experiences right now. We can't speak to anyone's experience. I was speaking with. Other than our own, I should say. But I was speaking to a girl who we met in the States last year. She was a fitness trainer out of Philadelphia. And we were just chatting. And I was like, you know, how's everything going or whatever? And, you know, it's still really bad over there, you know. So it's they're still stuck in lockdown. I've met so many organizations, so many fitness, powerful, powerful fitness companies, you know, absolute industry leaders have fired all their trainers. So trainers are completely out of work without government support, which is so depressing. But that is why I made we made the dumbbell program, is because we knew that mental health is like a huge thing. It only really occurred to me when I was having this conversation with her that mental health is a huge thing. And I think that, you know, if you can provide challenging, but actual workouts that really, I think really have proper programming, I think it kind of takes away the monotony of training at home by yourself or only with a little bit of equipment, a pair of dumbbells. And the reason I say that is because I think everyone is kind of over doing random workouts they see on Instagram or random stuff they put together, because even if you're in a gym and you're putting random stuff together, after a while, it gets boring.
Yes.
You're like, I'm not making any progress. It's stupid. So we just wanted to make people feel like they were working towards something. They were on track with something. They were progressing towards something. Because yeah, we could write a really stupid, easy dumbbell program. But I think with any program that you do, you want to be very clear what you can get out of the program and what you want to invest into the program as well. So yeah, the dumbbell program is still available for you guys. The booster programs are still available as well. It's at themindmuscleproject.com/programs. You can check that out as well. And yeah, one of the things we've been doing as well through the week, I know a lot of people have taken us up on this, is a free training journal, hardcover. We pulled out some of the old stock and we're just giving it away for free now for anyone that leaves us a review. So I know we were doing the digital journal and a booster program, but now we'll do a hard copy journal for anyone that leaves us a review. Apple suck. I know their podcast app is shit, but that is how you can leave a review on your phone. You just got to go to our episode, scroll to the bottom, and then you'll see the stars. You can just click the 5 stars and leave the review. You screenshot that, you send it to media@themindmuscleproject.com, and then we send you a code for a free training journal. So I've been shipping those off like crazy. The courier comes to my house. He goes, oh, you're the gym guy. I'm like, yeah. He's like, oh, back selling the books, eh? I'm like, yeah, back selling the books. So a lot of that stuff going on. A lot of stuff going on for us at the moment. And the new programs being released very shortly as well.
Which is super exciting. Cool. That is one job. If anyone's like, hey, you know, people are fine. Everyone's letting people go. The one job that I see is so safe right now is couriers. Those couriers.
Yeah.
They're going off the chain.
Yeah, and they're about to probably get employed by Amazon at some point in the future in Australia, if not already.
Yeah.
Have you seen any Amazon trucks shooting around?
They're not in the trucks, but when I do my Amazon Prime, sometimes it's an exclusive Amazon guy that turns up.
Mm.
So he's not driving an Amazon truck. I see the truck. I think it's a different company. But he's only doing Amazon deliveries.
Right. Amazon's coming to Australia, man.
It's already getting huge, and I can see the value proposition. It's unbelievably convenient, and they have a lot of gym equipment already.
It's starting to take over.
And supplements, stuff like that. So it'll change fitness for sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Awesome. Getting into listener questions?
Yeah, we got some really good questions this week.
All right, cool. Sorry, before we do the first one, guys, we're going to talk about a quick sponsor. We haven't mentioned them for a few weeks. They're still floating around. They're still existing. RecGen is about to launch their women's line. So if you guys don't follow them already on Instagram, RecGen's the... basically the male equivalent to Lululemon. Now, Lululemon is primarily female focused, which is fine, and they have amazing menswear. Are you wearing it right now?
Lululemon?
Yeah.
I am.
You got pants on, yeah. Look, we're in no denial that Lululemon have amazing gear, but the vast majority of their resources are going to their female department.
Sexism at its finest. Disgusting.
Sexual bullying. RecGen built looks, designs, and styles for guys. So if you're a male and you want just not only really good looking athleisure wear, but stuff that you can train in, perform in, and just cruise around in the house in, but not feel like a slob as well. You've got the best stuff there. It's got like that silver technology, so it's antibacterial and it doesn't stink and it washes really well. They just have amazing products. It's obviously the sister company to the main company, Zainrobe. They have amazing designs. They're a huge company. So we're very fortunate to have them on board. If you guys are interested, you can go to recgen.com, purchase any stuff now. They've got a lot of sales going on, but you can also get 20% off when you use the code MMP. That's one word. They are launching their women's line as well very soon. So I reckon the best way to keep up with that is just on the Instagram, RecGen.
Yeah, if no one has tried it, and I know we've recommended this in the past, but get just one of their t-shirts. If you've never tried it, get a t-shirt, do a crazy workout.
Oxy tea.
I'm hoping that your version of a crazy workout involves a lot of sweating and you will see the difference. It's crazy.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah, we're going to only print on the Oxy tea from now on.
Okay, cool. We got Rupert Luxton. Will training for performance events aesthetics be as big as it was pre-COVID, or will there be a shift towards the other benefits of training, such as mental health?
I think obviously the desire to look good will never go away.
Yes.
So I think you can say that undoubtedly it'll always be there, no matter what. In fact, if anything, people will be more motivated by that, by being so out of shape during the lockdown that they'll...
The corona killers.
Yeah, they won't care at all about their wellness or their performance or whatever. They're like, I just got to get rid of this excess body fat that I put on. So I think that's huge. If you put that aside, I think maybe the better question is there a greater need for training to support people's mental wellness and just their immunity and their ability to fight off disease? Yes, but no more than there already existed. I mean, there's always been those benefits associated with it. Potentially now people might say, hey, I'm just going to train so that when the next pandemic comes along, I'm not in an at-risk category. That might not be many people listening to this, but yeah, I think it's definitely brought, you're overweight, but it's not rubbed in your face every day, right? If you're a little bit overweight or if...
It is if you're in high school, but yeah, go on.
But yeah, if you're in your adult life, yeah, generally if you're obese or overweight, it's there. Yeah. You know it's there, but it's not rubbed in your face. When you turn on the news and it's like at-risk category, obese, diabetic, all this sort of stuff, it is a constant reminder on a daily basis that the state that you have let your body get into for whatever reasons is putting you at risk of dying from a pandemic far more than the person next to you who rides to work, goes on extra walks, just doesn't stuff their face every day. It's pretty simple. It's not like you have to be a gym junkie. I think that particular subset of population, lifestyle-related diseases that come from poor health and being sedentary, yeah, it's like time for them to step up. I think they will.
Yeah, and I also think what has become much more just commonplace and just accepted amongst the broader majority of people is the idea that, if you say to someone, hey, if I don't exercise for the day, I go crazy, or like it's just not good for me to like not have like an hour a day to hit some training. I think that, and particularly just because people have been in lockdown, it's like the one break they get, that has become... just like a really normal thing to say. I think like maybe 10, 15 years ago, I feel like, oh man, if I don't get to the gym, everyone's like, dude, you're like a gym junkie.
Right.
What do you mean? You don't go to the gym one day, you're going crazy. That's like, was pretty stupid.
Yeah.
And like, I remember when I was getting into it, that was not something that like, you would tell people and they would just really agree that that's common knowledge. I think that's changed now.
Right.
I think if you were like, going to your employer and it's like, yeah, I still need like, my hour a day to train in the morning is really important. I think most people are like, yeah, of course. Like, absolutely. We need you on your game. That's like, just part of being a human. And I think just because people have been locked up indoors, and that's been the number one thing people have been saying, hey, I've got to get outdoors to exercise, like for mental health, and it's essential. I just feel like that's not going anywhere.
If organizations could somehow make it mandatory without being sued because of all the social justice warriors and the political correctness that exists these days, that you had to work out in our training facilities or on our training program that we prescribe an hour a day, like 5 days a week that you work for us or whatever, and we'll pay you for that time, and we'll even cut off half an hour at the end of the day for doing it, you will ramp up productivity like nothing else. It is how much better is your day when you get out and you go for a walk in the morning, get some sunlight, you stretch, you get a bit of a sweat on. It doesn't have to be much. You are you're probably 2 to 6 times more productive than you are.
For sure. I'm sure some companies are already like this, but the day will come where someone's like, okay, cool. Like, what are the hours going to be? Okay, it's going to be like, get in the office at 8, leave at 6. And, you know, the employer will be like, okay, so when are you planning on exercising?
Yeah.
Like, that's like a standard question. Or like, oh, if you don't have anything organized, here are the programs we've got, yeah, you know, as part that we can help you out with. Or we've got this gym that we've got a discount at, and you can go there like at this time. Like, just the expectation of like, hey, we expect you to dress well and exercise.
Yeah.
Just to be part of the organization.
Well, even the companies that don't make, that are related to exercise, so maybe like True Protein or RecGen or...
It's standard there.
Or yeah, even when we spoke to Noble, like they have gyms built on site because they know that it's so important to not only the ethos of the company, but to the health of the people working there.
Yeah, in the same way a lot of good companies have like a bar, you know, yeah, so people can relax and unwind on Friday. Man, a small gym area,
yeah,
it's better.
No, that's crazy, yeah.
Okay, cool. Cool question here. Lucy Gommel. Subject is carbs, carbs, carbs. Message. Do we all really work differently when it comes to carbs? I eat a high carb diet day in, day out, regardless of activity, although I am pretty active, and I don't think I hit my protein. If I upped my protein and lowered my carbs a little, what real difference would I see?
Okay. Good question. There's a lot of factors to unpack here. Firstly, before we get into the specifics of that question, protein is the only essential, it's the essential macronutrient. So essentially, protein and fat are essential macronutrients. So I would say protein is more important first, just because, you know, it's basically everything in your body is made up of fats and proteins. But in order to support exercise, protein is going to be the most important thing. It's the foundation for hormones, it's the foundation for muscles, it's the foundations for bones and all this sort of stuff. So if you don't have enough adequate protein in your diet, but you have tons of fat, you're definitely going to get worse.
Or tons of carbs, she said.
No, sorry, I'm just talking, we're leaving carbs out for now. So just in the essential macronutrients, because carbs is not essential. If you have high protein but lower fat, you're going to be much healthier than if you're higher fat, low protein. So in that side-to-side comparison, and I don't want to make a black and white comparison here because you need both and you're going to get both anyway, but I would put protein as more important. So that being said, protein is the most important macronutrient. Now, if you're slightly under what you should be having for your protein based off your training, based off your age, your body weight, your metabolism, all this sort of stuff, you are not optimizing. And so I would say number one, and this is what everyone should go for once they, I'd say almost in line with managing your calories, the first step is getting enough protein. That's where we start all of our clients.
And I think I prefer it as a step one because it usually helps getting the calories under control quickly.
Yeah.
Just because of the satiation of it.
Yeah. And also people find that, hey, I can't have all this pasta if I've got to fit in this piece of chicken as well. So naturally they have to pull out some pasta to fit the chicken in, right? So there's a natural kind of balancing effect that most people do. Far less people will just add protein to everything they're eating already. There'll probably be some natural withdrawals of other macronutrients. Now, with people, so we've established that protein is extremely important. It's number one first. And, you know, just to give people the rough range we talked about, you know, a lot is 1.6 to 2 grams per kilo of body weight. So, or the best way to do it that I like to do it is just 1 gram per pound of body weight. So if I'm 205 pounds, I ate 205 grams protein. So you could go a little bit less than that. You could go 0.8 to 1 gram per pound of body weight. But yeah, 1 gram is really sort of the upper end per pound. So you wouldn't really go more than that. Now, so we've optimized for protein. And I would say stay there for a while. And then based off your energy, it's kind of, I'd say how you always want a minimum amount of fat. But based off how your energy levels are, is how I get people to add and remove carbs. So let's say we're working with, you know, just a natural amount of fat in the diet. We're not really adding any excess fat. So adding excess fat would be like, cool, we're going to like pour more oil on this or eat extra avocado or have these nuts here or choose a fattier cut of meat. That would be like adding fats. And then there's like what I call sort of just like the naturally occurring fats that just are in your meat that you cook with them. Yep. You know, there's some butter on your toast or whatever. They're in your eggs. That's sort of just like naturally occurring fat. So keeping that and then just using carb just based off, yeah, everyone is different when it comes to carbs. And they know that because they use fasting glucose monitors. They give people carbs and they respond differently to different carbs. And so it really just comes down to an individual thing. It sounds like you can eat a lot of carbs and be fine. Some people can't. Some people eat a little bit of carb and they feel shit, you know. But we do know that if you want to fuel performance optimally, if you want muscle building, if you want strength, if you want power, if you want sports performance, you do need carbohydrates.
Yeah, I think exactly. This person definitely should get the protein in order. But the thing that I think has been misleading and sometimes was misleading over time was just some people do really well on a high carb diet and then for some reason they just feel guilty about it.
Mm.
They're like, oh, I think I'm eating too many carbs. But there's no real reason why they are. You know, maybe they're at a maintenance level. They're reasonably active. But yeah, they eat more carbs than the average person. Everyone's on a spectrum. A lot of people are going to be eating more carbs than the average amount of carbs and do really well on that.
Yeah.
That's just the way it works.
Yeah.
You know, no reason to be at average or below average on how many carbs you eat if it's going well.
Yeah. No, it's a good point. And I think a lot of people as well, they feel guilty, but also some people feel guilty if they don't eat enough carbs. They're like, you know what? No, I've heard carbs are awesome for performance. I just got to smash them. They feel shit. They just keep eating carbs and they feel terrible. No, if you feel shit and terrible, you're either eating the wrong type of carbs, you need to swap them out, experiment with other ones, or it's too many.
Well, let's just, you know, a good example. So we had, what was that really good runner we had on the show?
Zach Bitter. Yeah.
Right. So he's like, whatever, ultra marathon. He's the world record holder for 100 miles. Absolutely nuts.
Fucking crazy.
And he eats like crazy low carb diet, right? Clearly doing really well. And then we had Matt Bartholomew, the powerlifter, on, and he's like, oh, I have like 1,000 grams of carbs a day. And you know, they're both working really well.
Yeah.
You know,
for what they want to do.
Yeah, there is an extreme variation that in how you can do carbs.
Yep.
You know, and you can really try both and see what works. And it's not like Zach is just way smarter than the other guy. Zach's just doing well for him. And it's probably another ultra marathon runner that is eating 600 grams of carbs a day and looks the same as Zach and is, you know, probably just as good as Zach.
Yeah, I would say like carbs is almost like the dial that you use to turn up or turn down and analyze depending on what your goal is. So if it's like muscle building and you like, because the protein's like foundational, right? Fat's foundational, sleep's foundational, water's foundational. And then carbs, like that dial that you add on, it's like, all right, cool. I'm eating like a, you know, just a moderate amount of carb. If I turn it down, how does that affect my goal?
Yes.
If I turn it up, how does that affect my goal? And that's really how I think most people should treat carbs.
And that's exactly how I've treated it. I found an amount that worked for me. And then when I was training crazy hard, I had to take it up.
Yeah.
And now more recently, I've trained less. I've taken it down. And I usually find just modulating that, it works well. Protein and fat, not really. Stays the same.
Yeah. And I also think, last point on this is that carb is always the easier variable for me to take in and take out. So like I've always in my life been a person that puts it in because I've always been about bulking. But I've talked about in the last sort of 12 to 18 months, I've made an attempt to get leaner. And with our nutrition coaching with Brad at the moment, from WAG, he's like, all right, cool, we're going to get a little bit leaner. What can you dial down in your calories? And I just think carbs is the easiest because it's like, how can you remove a yolk from, like, I don't want to start removing yolks from my eggs.
Yeah, or buying a cut of meat you don't enjoy.
Yeah, or not buttering my toast or whatever. Yeah. But what I can do is have one less piece of toast.
Yes.
I can halve my rice serving, you know?
If you can't do that, you've got a problem.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And it's like, all right, I'm just not going to have this juice today 100%. Or whatever, rather than buying like the light milk and the low fat butter, and that's not fun. Like, and it's just annoying and it feels more like you're restricting yourself. Whereas just eating a bit less carb and replacing it with vegetables or having half a piece of toast instead of two pieces of toast, like that's all the difference you need to lose weight. Yeah.
That's a very good call.
Yeah.
Okay. So Braun Athletics, training for the 2025 CrossFit season. How important is building an aerobic base this early when strength is the main weakness? AKA, how long does it take to build aerobic fitness? What are some ways to do it without taking away from strength gains?
You know, that's really good. That you're actually going to love our new programs that we've got coming up because we've gone back and forth on this a lot, but basically what you guys can expect in the future is we're going to be running 3 program streams that you can jump into at any time. Obviously, we'll start you at the start of a cycle, an 8-week block, but it's going to run continuously. So there's going to be a stream based primarily for people that want to get strong, a stream that for people that want to focus mainly on fitness, endurance, and then a stream for people that mainly want to optimize for body composition. So like a bodybuilding, more isolation program, body part split, that sort of thing. So those 3 streams, we're working on them at the moment. We'll be launching the strength template soon, but with the conditioning within the strength template and the accessory exercises is they support maximal strength. And the endurance work that supports maximal strength is the most, think about it as the most opposite amount of intensity. So in strength work, you're bringing very high intensity to a very short period of time. Think about a set of 10 on the bench. It's getting up towards your, you know, 11, 12 rep max. That intensity really picks up in those last sort of 3 to 4 reps. And that is what, a period of 12, 15 seconds. That's strength work. Now, and that's because remember, your body doesn't know that you're training with a barbell versus you're going for a run or you're on a bike or whatever. It's just your muscles receiving stimulus, right? Your nervous system receiving stimulus. Now, the opposite stimulus of that is very low intensity drawn out over a very long time. So those interfering intensities, because those intensities are so far away from each other on the spectrum, they don't get that interference. Now, the mistake that a lot of CrossFitters make is they bring those two ends of the spectrum so close together, and then they don't really get an adaptation of anything. Their strength is kind of like moderate but high volume, and then their workouts, their conditioning work is similar. It's kind of like
high intensity, short duration.
Yeah, and so they're kind of blended together, and so you don't really get a lot of adaptation initially, but then you get a very hard plateau, which I think pretty much anyone has experienced that if you've done CrossFit before. So yeah, if strength is a weakness for you, keep doing strength work as a priority because it takes a long time to get strong, and do a lot of conditioning work on that low spectrum, 30 minutes plus, 45 minutes, 2 hours. And that's the kind of base that you can build upon. And then when it comes time to get more sports specific for CrossFit, you will have those, you can start to kind of move towards the middle a bit more. You can bring your strength, you can bring the volume up on your strength work once your maxes are higher. You can bring your conditioning from a lower to a moderate to a high intensity, but you just don't want to live in that middle zone for too long. And that's just the best way to kind of periodize for the sport of CrossFit.
Yeah, it's often misleading, particularly if you're younger and you're smaller, you look up and you think, if I just got strong, I would be, you know, as good as all these other guys or all these other girls. But in reality, nearly everyone that is good at these type of sports played some sort of sport when they were younger that built them a phenomenal aerobic base.
Yeah.
And they often did it with something more fun than sitting on a Concept 2 row for 2 hours. Like, these people were playing like a field sport or just playing tons of sports or just doing something that allowed them to get like elevated heart rate for hours a
totally.
Day,
yeah.
many days a week, and they put it in. So yeah, the answer is it takes years and tons of volume. You know, Tour de France cyclists are in their later 30s for a reason. And they've probably been doing this stuff since they were 12. So like, just like strength, it takes a really, really long time to build up. So if you didn't play those type of sports when you were younger, very good chance it's like seriously underdeveloped. And even doing a VO2 max test, I think, is a pretty good idea. I remember I did one during CrossFit and
on a bike.
Yep. Was a really good way to do it. And I would encourage you maybe to use that as a pretty good baseline to start building things up from there.
What is the score for a VO2? It's around 60-70, right?
Yeah, I wasn't in the 60s. I was like 59.
Okay.
Which was like pretty solid.
Yeah.
But I remember when I did it, Ricky Garrard did it like the same week, the same place as me, and he was like off the fucking charts.
Like 80 something?
No, it was like high 60s, but it was the best test they'd had there.
Wow.
Yeah. And same thing, right? Outside of everything he had
and the
done,
most positive anyone's ever tested for SARMs as well.
and he played field sports growing up, I'm sure. So if you didn't do that, and I remember I've trained with a bunch of people doing CrossFit and stuff that didn't play those sort of sports when they were younger. They maybe played sports, but just not a sport that takes a lot of aerobic conditioning. And they often just struggle. And
like
until
shot put or something.
Yeah, I played with someone that played cricket and they just didn't really have a big aerobic base. You know? But you know, really good at the sport, but just didn't have a base and like always couldn't work out why they struggled. You got to just like buckle into the fact that it's going to take a really long, really long period of time.
Yeah.
And I would try and find some activities that you can do that you enjoy that is going to help build up those hours. Like, you play basketball, that's an incredible way to basically add a whole bunch of volume into your week. Find something fun. Like, I was body surfing on the weekend on my Whoop. I was at like 130 average for an hour and a half.
Mm.
Like, I hadn't trained yet.
Do you pull the Whoop extra tight before you go out to surf? Like, so it doesn't rip off?
Yes. Yeah, it actually does. Yeah. If you swim fast and it's loose, it'll come off. And a very big wave, yes, it'll definitely come
and
off.
And then your Whoop is at the bottom of the ocean.
But if you can find that, you know, I really encourage people to do that. Even if it's just like, hey, I enjoy cycling outdoors. Something like that. Otherwise, I truly think that if you haven't put in the base, unless you just like fall in love with running or the air bike, which like nobody actually does, it's going to be difficult to put in the hours that it takes. Mm. It's not as fun and as engaging as slinging weights in the gym.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And this is what has been such a fun journey for you and me, Raf, is like, obviously we both played so much sport. We got so much different coaching from different coaches through our kind of CrossFit sporting careers. And we've gotten so much different coaching and specialized coaching for our post-CrossFit careers and so much learning. And obviously, combined with the podcast, it's been like so fun to like finally, because we haven't programmed in ages and working with the team, it's been so fun to put all the best practices that we've learned over the years into the specific streams of programming that we'll be launching soon. So I'm very excited for it. But yeah, there's just been so many lessons we learned that like as they come up and we regurgitate them, it's like, oh, I remember learning it from that person or going through this cycle in my training or working with this coach on that thing. Like, it's just crazy how much when you're open as a sponge, like how much you can absorb and learn.
Yeah. And I think also, you got to compete as well. It can be really good. When you compete, you put it on the line and it forces you to learn stuff.
Yeah.
Cause you're like, hey, if I don't get better at this, it's like, it's humiliation.
And it motivates you to come back and learn that
motivating.
Thing.
Yeah. Okay, we got a couple of Netflix documentaries we're going to review this week.
Yeah, nice.
You are going to have to pronounce your first one.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So the Netflix documentary, the Netflix show is called Ozark. Now it's on its third season. So it's, I think people listening to this have probably seen it. It's a Netflix original. I just got into it based off a Joe Rogan podcast recommendation because I've been on the JRE train again. And yeah, so Ozark is, I think their main actor's name is Jason Bateman. He doesn't really do serious shows. This is kind of like the first thing I've seen him in that's like serious shows. He normally does like rom-coms, but he kills it. It's actually mad. It's such a good idea for a
show. Is it a series?
Yeah, so it's a series about basically this guy who launders money for a drug cartel. He's got a normal family life. He had like a legit job. He was like a finance advisor. A financial advisor, he would take people's money and like invest it for them. But then, you know, I'm not going to obviously careful with the spoiler alerts, but you know, as it plays out, he ends up, you know, all this stuff to do with money laundering and the drug cartel and all this stuff, and his life completely changes. But what I like about it so much is he's such a, like, he's really business savvy. He has to launder like shitloads of money, like millions and millions of dollars. And I know what money laundering is, right? But I didn't know how they did it. You know, when you watch like Narcos, right?
Yeah.
You know that like cocaine is made somewhere as a plant. And
yeah,
then
I don't
it's
really
like,
know. How do they do it?
Cocaine.
No, sorry, the money laundering.
Yeah, yeah. So, no, that's what I'm explaining. That's why I like Narcos, right? Because you get to watch the, like, all the intricate dramatized details of the cocaine trade from the very beginning where it's grown as a crop to like everything to like law enforcement arresting people and users that are using it, right? And there's a whole show about it. And it's so cool because you're like, wow, I didn't realize like all this stuff happened. And basically, that is what it's like for money laundering. And there's a few, like I haven't gotten super deep into it yet, but basically how it works is, so let's just use it like the gym, for example, right? This is how it might like launder money at the gym. Well, first of all, you can just make a legitimate, you can just spend your illegitimate cash on a real, like you can build it, like say we want to build a gym, right? I can just buy everything in cash. I can start the gym with $200,000 of illegitimate money, right? So illegal money. And then through that business, right? So say I put no more, I'm not going to launder any more money through it. Through that business, I bought it with drug money, right? The ATO doesn't know anything about it. But then I can create legitimate money with it, right? Even though I started it with drug money, which is what a lot of people do. They call it like getting out of the game, right? Yep. So they spend all their drug money on a legitimate asset, which then brings in legitimate
money. We all
know
a lot of CrossFit gyms started that way. We do.
A lot of bodybuilding gyms did. But then, if you want to continue to wash money through that business, what you would do, right, for example, is say, now this is the part where I'm not 100% on, but this is how they explain it in the show, and I'm still kind of trying to figure out how it works, is basically, say we needed to replace the gym mats, right? But say we needed 15 mats replaced and it cost $1,000.
Yep.
I would put it down on the books as, so I'd pay for the 15 mats and $1,000 cash, right? And that would be like in that other company. And that would be like, but then in our books, what it would say is we bought 100 mats and I spent like $20,000 or whatever. So I'm not sure exactly, like that's the stuff that he's doing in the show to like, to wash the money or whatever. But I'm not sure exactly how that would work. I just assumed what it would mean is you would have on your books spent all that money. But what you've really done is you've kept aside $9,000 of cash that now you can keep, which is like money that you like, in quotes, like should have spent.
Yeah. And I think what I've heard a lot of gyms do as well is like they'll have, you know, the gym will be doing whatever, 30 grand a month. On paper, the gym's doing 90 grand a month.
Right.
And then they're just able to put 60 grand into this business. Every single month that is coming from some other method.
Yeah.
But yeah, I never really thought about it. It is like a huge thing with crime. It's like what do you actually do with the money? It's like one of the biggest problems.
Yeah.
And I've heard that even with COVID, it's shaken things up a little bit because cash is like really become unpopular with COVID.
Right.
Less and less places are accepting cash. Yeah, it was like almost like the full death hit to cash, COVID. Like it's pretty much
it's crazy. Yeah, yeah.
And criminals obviously love cash.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, that's basically how they clean and free up their money is because, yeah, I've actually spent all this money, but in reality, now you haven't. The government thinks you have spent it, but you've got it free now. You've got that difference that you've got left over that you can do anything with because in theory, it's in the system, it's been spent.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Good to know
if we decide to turn this into a criminal organization. Yeah. And have you got a movie?
Yeah, so I've started watching. So this is a number of episodes. It's quite unusual. So it's like a number of episodes, like a series, but they're all quite short, so they're only like 23 minutes. I don't really know why they decided to do it this way. But it's basically about a pro cycling team. It's called the Movie Star Team. Movie Star is just like a sponsor for the team. But that's what the team is called. And it's like top-level cycling. So it's like Tour de France cycling, but they're doing all sorts of different competitions. But it's really similar to... It's like a European... Imagine like it's subtitles. It's like a European cycling version of The Last Dance. So it's like this awesome team going for like their final throw at the dice. Oh, yeah.
What's it called again?
The official name, it's like the Spanish name, The Least Day Expected.
Hmm.
It's got, I think, a Spanish name and that's the
Is it in Spanish?
Yes. So okay. It's got subtitles.
Yeah.
But it's really, really good. You can actually change the settings and it'll give you English. Like it'll make a sound in English.
Oh, yeah, dub it.
But it's horrific.
Audio dub,
it's
horrific. They're always horrific. Yeah.
Just read the subtitles. It's really good. Like if you like following the Tour de France, I think it's awesome. I always have trouble with sports that I haven't played, like really enjoying it because I feel like I can't appreciate it. But I think just doing fitness, it does give you some appreciation for what they're going in. Obviously, they do heaps of doping and all that type of stuff as well.
Yeah.
But it's really good. And I've just started the second episode of it. And for like a 10 episode thing, I think I'm actually will get through this one.
Mm.
It's literally the best way to explain it. It's like the Michael Jordan. It's not nearly as cool as Michael Jordan. But it's like a Spanish cycling version of that team.
And speaking of Michael Jordan, we will be watching the last two episodes this week to review it all next week. But we didn't give our ratings. So for Ozark, I'm really enjoying it. I had to really push Ev over the line to watch the first episode. But now we are, I think, one episode to the end of season, from the end of season one. And I heard it only gets better. So far, I'm going to give it a 4.5 out of 5. It's probably one of the better, more engaging series I've watched for a while.
I will give this cycling documentary The Least Day Expected 3 out of 5. But if you are into cycling or you like watching the Tour de France, I would 100% recommend it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd see. The only reason I would say Ozark is just slightly not quite a 5 yet, because it really had potential to be because it's so well written, is there are just some scenes that are just so predictable.
Mm.
And then that just kills it. You always want that mad shock, that mad thrill. Which was like what I got in Giri Haji, that show that we reviewed a while ago. That was like super unpredictable. So anyway, guys, before I let you go, we've got the Whoop obviously on our wrist right now. We're tracking lots of stuff. Probably the best stuff that I've been tracking over the last kind of 6 weeks with the lockdown has been my sleep, which has gone up dramatically. I've averaged I was averaging 6 hours a night. I've gone up to about 7.5 hours. So that whole extra sleep cycle. And happy to report, I hit a all-time PB, which was 8 recovery green days in a row, which I don't know if anyone has kind of topped that, which is pretty insane. Like, I felt pretty amazing during those days. But how I've been using it recently is one of the things I've been working on is keeping my steps up. But how Whoop tracks it is really interesting because I got the Whoop and the Apple Watch. I wear them both. Is obviously Whoop tracks your strain and your calories, and I like to measure it up against the Apple Watch's steps and calories, and they're super accurate. So some people are not sure if their Whoop is accurate versus their Apple Watch versus their Garmin or whatever. Find the Whoop calorie burn and the Apple calorie burn are very similar. And the getting steps on the Whoop band, even though it's not like tracking steps necessarily, the strain that it gives you is a very similar amount of like kind of like calorie burn that you get on the Apple Watch. So you can have one or the other, obviously. They're both super accurate.
The Whoop I find is better with clients because it captures... So we used to use like step count as like, okay, how much daily activity are you doing outside of training? The good thing about the Whoop is that it counts that stuff, like maybe riding a bike, that is like extra activity that wasn't steps.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry.
That's why I prefer it.
Yeah, no, I prefer it as well, obviously. But I meant it in terms of people were like, I don't know if it's as accurate as my Apple Watch. Yeah. And I'm like, no, it's the same. If not, it's better. And it's also so predictable. Like I had not done a CrossFit workout in a while. I went to a friend's place. We did ski erg and dumbbell snatch combo. I get to the end of the day, I look at my Whoop score. It automatically put in for the specific time period, functional fitness. Yeah, it knew it.
No, it's crazy.
How does it know?
I don't know.
It's not because
it knows it was, like, swimming. It knows bike. I did like a duathlon. Knew that.
But I guess like if it was like, if it knew, okay, this is crazy shit, right? Because if it knew that I was doing functional fitness most days in the morning and I put functional fitness in previously, nothing.
It's nothing to do with
that. It's not predictive. It's just new.
It must be to do with the movement of your arm or maybe your spikes in heart rate. I don't know, man.
It's crazy. Maybe they got, because it works on movement as well. Maybe they got the Whoops in a lab and they're shaking them in the different movements and they're saying, these are functional fitness. Maybe. Because like dumbbell snatch and ski erg, it's like super up and down, right?
Yeah, it means it knows for sure if you're jerking off at home.
Puts it in as masturbation. Dude, it's got video gaming in there as well.
Yeah, it's crazy. And one other trend I noticed they launched, which is pretty cool, is they launched trends for your respiratory.
Yeah, so I saw that.
This all come out of like the COVID situation. Thing is, so obviously it'll help you know if you've got COVID earlier, but you should go get a test anyway. But it doesn't really matter about COVID. It helps you with all types of like flus and colds now. So it's actually better than it used to be to predict if you're about to get
sickness.
Yeah.
Oh man, it's amazing. Guys, if you don't have the Whoop on your wrist right now, or if you maybe put the Whoop down and you're not using it, you forgot to charge it or whatever, like, don't be a fool. This is the most advanced technology besides your phone that you can have in your life today, and you need to have it on your wrist. Getting this data is amazing. Fuck what they do with the data. This shit is awesome. All right, so Whoop.com.
If China knows how much I'm sleeping, don't give a fuck.
Yeah. They should be scared. Like, fuck, these guys get a lot of rest. So, Whoop.com, if you guys check out with the code MMP15, MMP15, you get 15% off your entire order. I recommend adding some extra ProKnit bands into the cart just to keep it interesting.
If you've had a Whoop for more than 6 months as well, I would say you should get a new strap.
Yeah.
I got a new strap and it's just way better. You don't realize how loose it's kind of got, particularly if you train and you swim and that sort of stuff. It's worth getting some more straps.
Absolutely. All right, guys. Whoop.com. Check out with the code MMP15 and check it out there. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in this week. Speak to you all soon. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themindmuscleproject.com/theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.